podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Chels. Here we go. It's another week of hijinks and entertainment down at Stamford Bridge and in Spain with So Cosmopolitan. But not for much longer, because soon our team won't be going anywhere other than up or down the motorways. Oh well.
Is that because we've got Man City in the semi-final?
Well, yeah, that's absolutely it. I love a man with a positive attitude. You know who it is. It's the voice of reason? No, I don't know what it is. It's the voice of something or other. It's Gary Hayes, who's getting the first intro in because he interrupted.
Yeah, what's that about, by the way?
Well, because he interrupted.
You can't interrupt it to get recognition, Andy. You can't interrupt now.
You see, it's so unfair.
You missed the boat.
That's the first time I've never been introduced first.
Well, I haven't introduced him yet. So actually, here is Andy Saunders.
I feel slighted.
I could see that. Your face. Everyone who's listening, we do this on Zoom. And there was Andy sitting back in his chair, cigar in one hand, cricket ball, throwing it nonchalantly up in the air, spinning it and twizzling it like he does. And then he stopped. And he looked horrified when he thought I was going to introduce Gary Hayes first. But luckily, order has been restored, which hopefully will happen down at the bridge soon. Hopefully tomorrow night. And our second guest is, of course, Gary Hayes. But first of all, how are you, Andy? Are you back out on the cricket grounds?
Well, I wish. The weather's been so terrible that everybody's about 6 weeks behind with their preparations because we've had so much relentless rain. So I've been down the cricket club and I've been trying to prepare a pitch, but it's just not been possible. So a short answer is no, not yet, but we'll be hopefully soon.
When does your season start?
Well, it officially starts on May the 6th, but we usually do a few pre-season friendlies. And we haven't been able to do that. I did have my first net yesterday, and now I feel like a 90-year-old Ken Bates.
Maybe you should get a charity game against all the Chelsea players who are never going to get a game this season.
Well, they're not doing anything else, are they?
No, exactly.
You'd get 11 there, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, and subs.
So tell me, before you launch into your pre-prepared script, how did it go at the Chelsea Supporters Trust meeting on Saturday evening, at which you were special guests?
Oh, it was absolutely fantastic. Really,
tell the listeners
really
what that was.
Yeah, the Chelsea Supporters Trust have their meetings throughout the year, and they were getting together, update. I don't think it was an AGM, was it, Gary?
It was an SGM.
Which means?
Special general meeting.
There you go.
Because there were two special people in attendance.
There were.
There's Louis Benavente people. And Ed Wilkinson.
Oh, that's funny. I see what you did there. No, it was Gary and myself. And they invited us.
I mean, you are very special. So, you know.
Well, that was the joke.
Yeah, it's already been made. So can we just get off the slightly incorrect joke that's being made? So, we went along to talk about the blueprint, and it was wonderful. And actually, I was quite surprised anybody turned up because, of course, the football match, which we will talk about possibly later on, was so rubbish. But yeah, everyone was there. It was a really good night. Thank you very much to Mark Meehan and everyone there at the Supporters Trust who made us very welcome, looked after us. We got good tea, good coffee. Oh, it was fabulous.
Had a pint of water.
Did you get heckled?
No heckling.
Oh, I should have come, shouldn't I?
Yeah, there was just love in the room, Andy. I know it's alien to you, all this love in the room, but it was really good.
What's that like, people being nice to you?
Who would know, Andy, on your side of things? No, I'm nice to you. We love you, Andy. There, deal with that.
Yeah, Gary was horrible on the WhatsApp group about you, wasn't he?
Oh, he was. Well, you're both pretty vile most of the time.
We had a few people come up to us. We were just chatting. They said, oh, we listen to the pod every week. And I said, oh, what do you think? They went, yeah, we listen. It's all good. That's Saunders. They didn't really. They didn't even say your name.
That's Saunders. He's the best thing about it. You guys are okay.
Oh, wasn't that pleasant tonight? They said there weren't any arguments or anything. It was so nice. But
yeah. No, I'm glad it went well. It's good. Have you actually finished it? Is it done? When are we going to hear it?
Well, here's the thing: is that
well, so no then.
No. It's getting done. It's near. It's not actually that far off. But here's the thing: is that we keep doing more interviews, and we've got to stop doing interviews.
Oh, do you? I didn't know that.
No, okay. the problem is because of how this has now got its, and it's what happens. And we've talked about this before in the past with documentary. Quite often, you put things out. And suddenly something comes back and somebody who's never spoken before comes along and says, actually, we'd like to talk. So we've had a few of those. Look, it's the way of it. But we're still aiming at the end of May. Last week of May is when it gets released properly.
But then what we are going to do, which we announced on Saturday, is we are going to release the Matthew Harding tapes.
Oh, okay.
So these, as we're eager to caveat, these aren't a response to the Ken Bates tapes. This, it's more a case of after we did the stuff with Ken, we had a few people come to us and say, are you going to do some stuff about Matthew? And we said, well, we've spoken to people for the series and they're in there, you know, they're in the main series, and but we're not releasing anything like we've done with Ken. It's just that the agreement with Ken is that we would do this. But then they just said, well, we would like to talk now. And we're like, well, okay, but you've never spoken publicly and we've tried to get a hold of you and we couldn't. And they said, well, we want to do it now.
Can you give us any agreed, idea about who these people are that you're talking about?
When they come out, you'll hear.
Okay.
When they're recorded.
And it's incredible because they talk about the stuff, you know, Matthew's plans for Chelsea, had he been made chairman, what he wanted to do with the club, how he saw the future of football, which is really interesting stuff, and how the club could have taken on a different direction had he got control of it.
And also, Gary, don't you think there's something about it that what we've been trying to do is get something about the character of the man?
Well, that's what I was about to come to. So what we've done with it is because we don't want it to be, you know, we're not interested in the mudslinging. If anyone wants to see the back and forth between Matthew Harding, go and read some newspapers from the 90s, right? We're not in it for that. But obviously, there is a little bit of stuff that will come up where the record is set straight as people see it. But we just thought it'd be interesting to, which we're not going to be able to do in the main series because the main series is more about Chelsea. But we just think that where Harding is concerned, when people talk about him now, they know the Matthew Harding stand exists, but they see it as a battle between Ken Bates and Matthew Harding at Chelsea in the 90s. But what we've learned, and there's way more to Matthew Harding than that. That shouldn't define him. So we want to talk more about the Chelsea supporter that was putting money into the club and what his plans were and what he wanted to achieve and how he got involved. And like Kerry was saying there, just build the character around him, because there is a very good book that was written about him by Alison Rudd, but that's more about the focus on what was going on at Chelsea at the time, whereas we're getting under the skin of who Matthew was. So we've spoken to some people that were very, very close to him, and like we say, they've never gone on the record before, so we're just revealing new details about Matthew and his involvement with Chelsea.
So when are we going to hear this?
Hopefully next week.
Oh, amazing. So if it does anything as well as the Ken Bates one, then it'll be great, you know, because that went great guns, didn't it?
Yeah. And we just think that for reasons of, you know, one thing we've been keen to stress to people is that we're not doing this series with bias, even though we're Chelsea fans. We're doing it as professionals, and we don't want to create, you know, we don't want to drag up old stuff from the past and arguments and stuff. So we're not doing it for that reason. It's just that I think it's very valid when people come to us and say this guy was important to Chelsea in the mid-90s, and it'd be great if you could tell his story in the way that you've told Ken's. And we just thought, well, this opportunity's there, so let's do it, because we've got stuff with him, you know, that's just going to be going into the main series. So these voices get added into that, but then it's just nice to release a two-part special about him as well, so that fans who knew him at the time or knew of him at the time can sort of relive some of that and get some extra insight. But then fans that are a little bit younger that weren't around when Matthew Harding was can learn more about this guy who they may be sitting a seat in the Matthew Harding stand but don't know everything about him. So it puts him into context of Chelsea.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, I hope it goes well, guys.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and don't forget, if you want to listen, it's The Blueprint, How Chelsea Changed Modern Football. The Ken Bates tapes. There you go.
And you can follow us on social media at blueprint_pod.
There you go. All done. Right. Okay. We've put off the inevitable for as long as we possibly can. It's time to talk Chelsea stuff. So, okay, let's go back a few days in time to last week, and Chelsea went over to Real Madrid. Now, we all have this vision that Chelsea, no matter what, we can rise to the occasion, that we can find something in ourselves for the big games. And then we went to Madrid. And Andy, what were your expectations, honestly, as we're getting closer to kickoff? Did you think, well, you know, Frank might be able to galvanise them, give them a bit of that Europe appeal and give them some vim and vigour and go, hey, look, we've done this before when we're up against it? Or did you think this could be a very long evening?
I was sort of fluctuating between the two, really. I think we are, you know, we're famed for getting up for the big games. You know, there's been periods in our history where we haven't been playing particularly well, but we've managed to rise to the occasion. And so part of me was thinking, well, maybe that's something we can do against Madrid. I mean, my best case scenario in my head was a draw. I think I said that on the you know, sort of predictions last week. I didn't think we'd get much more than that, but I thought we might be able to nick a draw. And I didn't think we'd get battered, but I did think that we're up against a really, really good side, and we're not a really good side at the moment. And so if you took the emotion out of the situation and thought about it pragmatically, it was going to be a difficult evening.
Yeah, and Gary, I mean, as always, we always have hope in our hearts as far as Chelsea are concerned. Do you think that actually we might have to start getting used to not having so much at this moment in time? And how did you see it panning out as well for Real Madrid?
Well, I think I said last week or at some point that people thought Frank coming back, and yeah, we could, oh, because we do this, we have a bad season, we sack off the manager and we win the Champions League. And it's like, yeah, but come on, this is, that's the past. That's not the present. And look, I don't think, and I could just be incredibly optimistic here, I don't think Chelsea are going to suffer another season like this next year and the year after. Not to say we're going to win the league next year. I just think this year is an anomaly in that there's been so much change from the boardroom to the backroom staff to the dressing room. And we'll come to the Brighton game. But the Brighton game, seven of the players that started that game weren't at Chelsea last season. Three of them weren't at the club in January. So 70% of the outfield players weren't at Chelsea last year. What Chelsea got by on in 2012 was team spirit. Okay, we know this for a fact as well, Kerry, right? For stuff that will be later revealed. But to think, to make 2023 Chelsea comparable with 2012 is just impossible. It's chalk and cheese, right? You know, you can't compare those two teams, because asking, you know, I know Frank can go in and give the rallying cry that he said he's done, you know, this is Chelsea, we don't do this. Well, I know you're doing that because you're trying to recall something, but it's something that doesn't exist at the moment, because how can it? These players, they're teammates, but they're not mates. You know, and that's not criticising them. It's sort of just observing of where's the leadership? There isn't any. Kepa's your captain at the weekend. Like, come on.
Do you think that this experience, this terrible experience that we've had this season, I don't think there's any other expression for it, might next season pay some dividends, and that they've all been down in the trenches, they've all been down really low, and that it could actually galvanise them next season as a unit to kind of come out and go, we're never doing that again, we hit an adia last year, we're not going to go back there, and it's up to us to fix it, no one's going to fix it for us.
I think absolutely. I think these could be formative months for a lot of those players. You know, when you hit rock bottom, for a club like Chelsea, yeah, you could say, well, they're 11th. Are they rock bottom? Yeah, probably for where we've been, that is rock bottom for a lot of people. Certainly for a lot of fans, you might as well think we're relegated now. You know, it's not the case that we are seeing unprecedented changes in the club. Yes, you can have people shouting and saying, but you spent 600 million, you've done this, you've done that. Well, yeah, exactly. That's the problem, isn't it? Because they've tried to move everything really quickly and have probably gone too quick with everything, that the real world has not been able to keep up with the plans. So actually, we've gone so far forward with what we're trying to do ahead of time that it's the future is caught up with the present, and the present is being still informed by the past. We know that no club can cope with the size of squad and the size of egos that Chelsea have. Graham Potter had this problem. Tuchel had it before him. Then Potter had the problem. Then Bruno had it for a few days. And then Frank's got exactly the same problem. There's just too many players, too many egos, and not enough time to actually implement any change or any plans of how to play.
But not enough experience either.
Yeah,
and again, this isn't criticising players for something they haven't got. You know, you can't criticise a right back for playing as a striker, for instance, right? This is just a factual observation, is that Chelsea have got too much of the same thing. Too many young players. Like, we were chatting about it earlier, weren't we, Kerry? And it's like we've got a youth team playing at the moment on steroids. And the steroids come in the fact that a lot of them have arrived for big money. But you look at the Real Madrid team, that's got legs in it, right? That's got game management. When Chelsea started that game really well and had a couple of good chances, their heads didn't go. They just eased their way into the game. They got the ball down. They started to control it. Whereas Chelsea, you've got a lot of young players that are big names, and rightly so because of the ability they've got, but they haven't really achieved much. You know, Enzo hasn't done much. I know Enzo's a World Cup winner, but he's a World Cup winner from the squad he was in. He's not a World Cup winner because he was pivotal in that team in the way Messi was, right?
Felix hasn't done much. And he didn't start in the team.
You look at it and these are good players, but they're learning on the job, and a lot of them are 23 and under.
Well, okay, I think I accept that. I certainly accept it in the Brighton game. But if you look at the Real Madrid game, let's just go through some of the names that started in that game. Silva, you know, he's a very experienced player. Koulibaly, very experienced player. Kante, very experienced player. Fernandez wins the World Cup, very young, I accept that. Kovacic, very experienced player. Chilwell and James, Champions League winners. Sterling.
James is still only 23.
Still a Champions League winner. Sterling, you know, multiple league winner. João Felix, very young. I mean, that team has got some experience in it, Gary. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but then you're looking at where Koulibaly's getting thrown in there and hasn't had a good season. It's his first season at Chelsea. Mm. I think Kante
it's different, though,
hasn't,
isn't it, to saying there's no experience?
No, but what I mean as well, though, this is what I was saying about the collective, where they're teammates, but they're not mates, right? Because they still haven't got that bond.
That.
You can see it. They look at each other and they're sort of like, what do I expect out of you? And I think Kante and Silva are the leaders. I agree with that. But Kante hasn't really played all season, so he's worried about himself at the moment. Silva, you can't do it all by yourself. And then I think you look at Koulibaly, you know, to look at the Real Madrid game, the way he gets sucked out of position. I know it's a great ball in from Carvajal for the opener, but how does he let Benzema get a run on him? So then what you've got is the experienced player in the team just isn't up to it, because Benzema gets a run on him. Not that he's sprinting and he just outpaces him, he just outwits him.
Yeah, listen, I agree with all that, but you know what I'm saying is it's not a case as if we have a youth team there. That's what I'm saying. It's not a youth team.
But I think
team.
By and large we do.
I think against Brighton it was pretty youthful. But, you know, against Madrid, we stuck a lot of experience on the pitch. It wasn't, you know, necessarily a young, callow team. We just played a better team in Real Madrid who looked like they could score at will, frankly. I mean, Real Madrid were, you know, cruising for most of the game, and then, oh yeah, we better score, and did, you know. And I think that we acquitted ourselves okay, particularly in the first half. Made a couple of stupid mistakes, could have done without going down to 10 men. You know, I mean, it's arguable whether Kepa should have saved the goal, arguable, when it went through Fofana's legs. But, you know, it wasn't a disaster. We didn't get battered. I didn't think that it was, you know, something to be ashamed of or embarrassed about. You know, I'm not buying the, hey, we're still in the game. I think we're going to lose this and lose it significantly. Not buying, you know, this punditry afterwards that we're like, it's all right, we're still in the game. But I didn't come away from it thinking, oh my God, how am I going to show my face to my non-Chelsea fans tomorrow who are going to kind of like take the mick? Because how could they? You know, we did what we did with the team that we've got. You know, we're just not a great team at the moment.
And luckily, the Brighton game wasn't on TV, so when everyone would wind you up about it, it wasn't available to be viewed, thank God, because that was a completely different matter, which we'll get to. But I would accept...
There were some... Sorry, Gary, carry on. I didn't want to interrupt you. Carry on.
Hey, this is the politest podcast.
It's the new me.
No, I was just going
to say... son told me I wasn't allowed to interrupt you. He said I was very rude to you, and I should apologise.
Andy, what did you want to say? Because I'll interrupt him for you.
I can't remember.
Just text me.
Who knows? If you work it out, text. But yeah, I think the experience we got in that side is worried about its own game at the moment. You know, with Silva having been out, he's finding his feet again. There's a lot of basic errors that are going on in that side. You know, I mean, you can pick things up, and I don't want to pick people up because I think it's boring. And you just feel that, though, this team is trying in certain ways to do things and get them through, like against Real Madrid. But I just think it's been battered so much this season with all the constant changing that it's just not in their legs. And I think half of them just need to get away from football. The sooner this season finishes, the better for the team, the better for the club, the better for everyone.
Better for us.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean
are you painful. Are you going to games with a sense of joy and expectation at the moment, or are you going out a sense of loyalty and duty? Because I know which one is for me.
I start with the first and quickly drift into the latter.
How about you, Gary?
I'm going with the view of I can't turn up when we're winning things and love it if I don't turn up for this.
Yeah, that's what I mean, loyalty and duty.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The pain is worth the ultimate gain. But
there's nothing wrong with loyalty and duty, by the way. You know, that is part and parcel of being
that's what makes you a supporter, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. That's part and parcel of being a Chelsea fan. You know, supporter clues in the name. That's what we've always said on this podcast. You know, so there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, am I going along, you know, with a bounce in my step as I walk down the Fulham Road and sit in my seat and think, oh, we're going to be really, really looking forward to this? Or am I sitting there with a sense of trepidation thinking, Christ, I hope this isn't like last week?
But just to go back to
Madrid is that I know what you're saying, Andy. There's experienced players out there, and there were, but at the same time, you know, Koulibaly wasn't at Chelsea last year. Sterling wasn't at Chelsea last year.
I get all that.
They've had four managers this year, and I think they're coming into it where a lot of the time, when you're in the trenches as they are now, you know, to use that analogies, it's just. You need to be able to look around and understand what it is you're fighting for and how you're fighting for it. And again, this isn't any fault of the players. I don't believe that we should be on their back too much just yet, because they're all still learning about each other and they're sort of learning about the club. And it must be really difficult for them to understand. And this is what happens when you have such a high turnover of staff and players, is that the culture sort of goes, right? It's sort of good we kept Azpilicueta just as that figurehead, because where does the culture exist within that? I know, obviously, we've got younger players like Mount and James and others that have been around, but they're still not the leaders. They're still maturing. They're not matured. And so you've got Azpi, there's that connection. But beyond that, there's not much in there still, you know. And I think Chelsea has got too much of one thing, and it's going to take time to sort of claim the identity of it. Because when people say, oh, look at Chelsea, and there's no style of playing, there's no identity, and it's like... Well, yeah, they shouldn't be, because they're building it. They're trying to re-establish the club. They're trying to what's the term? You know, they're trying to rewrite what the club is.
Reinvent it.
Yeah, that's it. They're trying to reinvent it from the boardroom to the dressing room as well, right? So I have some empathy for them. Doesn't mean that it's nice to watch, but I just think we need a sense of perspective of where we are.
I would have liked to have seen more of an evolution than a revolution. I just think that all good teams, as far as I can see, evolve. And, you know, people come to the end of their time at teams, and the John Terrys and the Frank Lampards and the Didier Drogbas and, you know, that amazing team, they all came to the end of the road in terms of age and retirement and moving on. But we evolved. You know, we brought players in while they were still there, and there was a continuity. And Gary's right to talk about culture, because culture and identity are inextricably linked. And I think that what we don't have at the moment is either. We don't really have a culture that the fans can buy into. You know, the fans can't sit there and go, I am part of this. What am I part of? You know, I mean, am I part of, you know, a club that's been around since 1905 and everything that goes with that, or have some American owners come in, chucked everything out out and want to start again with something new, which might be bright and lovely and interesting and something we can get hold of. But at the moment, we feel like we're slightly in flux. And I don't blame supporters for being, you know, slightly confused and baffled by what it is they're supporting at the moment, you know, because, you know, they're swinging from, well, it's obviously the manager, you know, Graham Potter. It was Graham Potter that ruined the club, to, well, it must be the players because Frank Lampard can't get a tune out of them. And, you know, and I, whilst that frustrates me, that kind of reductive attitude to things frustrates me a little bit, I also understand it because I find myself doing it a little bit, you know, tearing what little hair I have out, going, what is this? Do you know what I mean? Because it isn't working. How have we gone from being, you know, sort of nailed on Champions League side to being 11th in the table with no prospect of going up and, you know, still mathematically possible for us to be relegated, even though we're not going to. But, you know, it is, it, you know, all those, we shouldn't be having those thoughts. And how's that happened in one season? And Gary's right. If you get rid of the culture or you don't pay attention to the culture, you lose something fundamental in your football team, I think.
Yeah, and I'd also say this isn't, I don't like this thought that it's the new owners who have caused this problem. This problem has been going for a number of years. We have stopped being a competitive champion side, you know, fighting for the title in the league. We are no longer that side, and we haven't been for a number of years. We've become, and we've talked about it, I think, last week, more of a cup side. And I think this problem has gone on for a number of years. I actually think they got handed, the owners, a hot potato, and they have also exacerbated the situation because they've come in, tried to do root and branch change across the club, not just in the playing staff, but also within the club and how it all works, the dynamic, the recruitment, everything. It's possibly and probably too much to take on at one time. But if they really are thinking long term, they might be thinking, you know what, if we do all this change now, it will settle down. And at that moment in time, we will be in a good place. It could be they fully expect to be in the, as much trouble as they are in a football way, and are going, it's okay, we'll work through it.
But that's a failure of communication then, isn't it? You know, they haven't brought the fans with them. They haven't said to the fans, look, this is going to be painful because what we're trying to implement is a plan that's going to, you know, make us fit to be a 21st century football club and the glory that comes with that. And, you know, it is going to be painful, but here's our plan and here's what the revolution looks like. The revolution won't be televised is not a good strategy. You know, it has to be, you know, in cahoots and in conjunction with the fans. We have to be, there has to be a process of communication. I think they feel like they're sitting in some sense of absentia from us, you know, some distance from us. And I think that's really frustrating for fans. It is for me. I find it very frustrating that I can't quite grab hold of, you know, I support the football team. I'll always support the football team. I always have and I always will. Doesn't matter what it looks like. I will support them blindly. You know, you can't change it. It is what it is. However, it doesn't make it any less frustrating.
Do you, okay, on the PR point, Andy, do you think...
I don't even think it's PR. I mean, yeah, look, I don't think it's PR. I think it's basic communication. I think it's essentially making fans part of the process. I'm not saying asking fans what to do, because as we've discussed on occasion, you know, football fans are morons, you know, me included. You know, we just want to win things and spend loads of money on players, and we want the glory, and we want really unrealistic, irrational things. You know, we're really not the people to ask. But I think we should be brought along with the process, if it is a process. You can't just push a process onto us and say accept it. I think it has to be something that is in collaboration with the overall aims and identity of the club, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, Gary, I'll flip this point to you in the fact, do you think that somebody like Todd Boehly possibly regrets the comments he makes? Really, as aside, I mean, I heard somebody say that he gave an interview to Sky when he got doorstepped in Madrid last week. It was not an interview. It was a passing comment about, oh, we're going to win 3-0. And he also made a comment about the Everton game and saying how bad that was. Do you think that his, in a way, those are moments of openness, but they seem possibly more playful than being serious, get turned round and twisted by the media and the press And he probably regrets saying these things out loud. I mean, how do you think he would view it? And
I don't think he's got anything to regret, has he, really,
in terms of what he's saying.
So I don't think he should
regret.
But he's
discovering the media in this country is what I'm saying.
I guess he's understanding that there's certain aspects, you know, it's not all the media, but there's certain aspects of the media that are more scuzzy than he's probably ever come across in his life. The idea of being stood outside a, you know, you're a 55-year-old journalist and you're stood outside a restaurant in Madrid waiting for a guy to finish his lunch just to get a comment out of him. Like, come on, mate, go work for TMZ. That's not Sky Sports, is it? Well, it is now, I guess, but that's not what it should be. But
clicks and likes, Gary, clicks and likes.
Yeah. Should he regret that? No, I don't think he should. And here's the thing, though, is that what the media's got to ask themselves, if they want to hold the mirror up to themselves, which I doubt they would. And again, this isn't everyone. There's people, I've worked in the media, there's people that I know that are good friends of mine that are good people and they don't operate in this way. But then there's obviously an aspect of it is. But people want to ask themselves that, look, you spent 19 years trying to get Roman Abramovich to talk to you. And he didn't. And you see what they're doing to Todd Boehly now. And you wonder why Roman didn't speak to you.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all about learning who to trust, isn't it, I guess, with these sort of things?
In terms of information, it's all about that. You know, you need to figure out who your curators are, whether it's for news or the things that you follow, the things that you like doing. You need to figure out, if it's music, what DJs you like to listen to on the radio, you know, what journalists you like to read. Same in sports, same in anything you do, really. You need to figure out who your trusted curators are based upon your worldview and how you approach things. And I think those trusted curators are becoming fewer and fewer because they're under-resourced, they're overworked, and they're being tasked to do a different job, which is to boost click-throughs and boost likes and play the social media game rather than approach things from a more traditional journalistic truth-based way. And I find that saddening a little bit. I mean, yeah, Gary, you'll agree with that, right? In terms of the way that people are asked to cover football these days.
That's why I don't do it anymore.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. But I remember getting asked when Conte just innocently, when he was at Leicester in the first season, when they had a cake in the press box, just the first season when we won the title under him. And someone had the cake and can I have a bit of your cake? Got his fork and had a bit. And then I got asked after that, if we bake him a cake, can you bring it to the press conference and get him to have it? And I was like, I don't want to do that. But well, now I've been asked by the people that pay me. They were like, well, you need to speak to Chelsea and ask if they'd mind doing that. And I was like, no, I don't want to do this. And then I had to do it and I phoned him up. And this is how the conversation went, I promise you. I phoned up and I said to the guy I was chatting to, I said, mate, and I've known him for years.
At Chelsea.
I've got a question. Yeah, I've got a question for you. He's in the comms team. I said, look, I've got a question for you. I've got to ask it, but if you can just say no, then I'll go back and tell him no. And he went, okay, what's the question? And I'd said, so they've asked me if they can bake a cake and bring it to Chelsea and I'll give it to Conte before the press conference starts. And he went, yeah, I'm going to go and ask Steve for you. And I went, no. And he went, he goes, yeah, no, I'm gonna ask Steve, who's the top. And I think he did it to wind me up. And then Steve emailed me and he went, can you just kindly let them know that we're not interested in guerrilla marketing? And I was just, and then when I saw Steve, he laughed when I was at a game and he just laughed and was like, have you got your cake with you? And I was like, oh, God.
But it's lucky you know them. Otherwise, it's a really embarrassing situation. It's embarrassing anyway.
And that was...
That's not journalism, is it?
No.
No.
But that's what it's become now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's my point. You know, you need to find out the people that you really do trust. I mean, listen, we all read the transfer nonsense because it's a bit of fluff to, you know, to pass the day and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I really do like... reading something with a bit of substance to it and with, you know, with some real depth to it. And, you know, it's harder and harder to find that stuff. Why are you showing me your phone on the screen?
I can't see it.
I can't even see who it's from, Gary. It's
like
a blurred screen.
Don't worry, sorry. I just had a message from my friend that I thought was really funny.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, yeah, it's another great moment for radio. Well, okay. Well, look, we probably have done enough about the the game, the Real Madrid game, you know, we had the misery of getting a red card as well for Ben Chilwell. And yeah, it's going to be difficult, but we'll talk about next week or the next game against Real Madrid later. In the meantime, we should just go to a commercial break. And we're back after that very short commercial break. So here we are now then. Here we go. It was only 2-0 in Madrid. You know, we've got the weekend to come. We've got Brighton coming. Should be a nice kind of game. They play the kind of football that allow us a bit of space to play our football. It's going to be great. This is going to be what we want. It's going to be Frank's return to Stamford Bridge. We're all going to be really singing his name, going absolutely mad. And then the game started. And my first point, Andy, did you or did you not expect... It was great with all the flags for Frank, but to me it sounded as though Super Frank was not sung at the top of everyone's voice.
No,
I was really surprised.
It wasn't. And but I've been saying this for ages, that the crowd, particularly for 3 o'clock kickoffs on a Saturday at Stamford Bridge, is muted. It is muted. And people moan about the Foo Fighters Pretender song being played too loud, and that's been a bit of fun on Twitter with some people. But you know, you've got the liquidator that's been ruined by singing We Ate Tottenham in the middle of it. You've got all this stuff going on before the game that, you know, that isn't creating any kind of atmosphere. And then you expect people to get, you know, fired up and passionate and committed to the game. And it just isn't working. And I think, you know, we've said it before that, you know, you've got an aging season ticket base, you know, me and you included, Kerry, Gary to a lesser extent because he's still a bit of a whippersnapper, but got an aging season ticket. So they don't tend to sing as much. You've got a lot of tourists. You've got a lot of people that aren't, you know, sort of long-term fans or haven't really bought into the culture of the club. They're there for other reasons. It's not unusual to us as a Premier League club. There are other clubs that this happens to as well, that clubs that get a global reputation, this tends to happen to. But I suppose that the answer to your question is I'm not surprised, because it's been like that at Stamford Bridge, particularly for day games, for ages. People just don't sing to the level that you would think they would.
And you know how Gary said, oh, well, I'm going to sing. I'm really going to sing.
He did say that. Did you get footage of him?
I didn't sing.
You can't,
why not?
Yeah, you can't
Shall I tell you why, Gary? Sing.
Tell me.
Right. Now, then you're going to apologise after. Because what happened was I got up on Saturday and I couldn't sleep on Friday night into Saturday morning.
Right.
Because it was a very sad day for me, because it was the anniversary of my dad's death. And I didn't feel like going, but I went. And that's why I didn't sing.
Okay, that's brought things down a bit.
Yeah, there you go. I will sing on Tuesday instead. No, I just, yeah, what it was, I got to the game and I weren't really up for it. And I just thought, oh, I don't want to be here. But I've only come because of the Supporters Trust stuff. So right. That's why I didn't feel up to singing, because I just thought, you know, it's a sad day for my family. 13 years to the day.
Well, you know, we all had a little thought of him on Saturday evening after he told us what was happening on that day. So yes.
Am I excused now? Well, no. Of course I'm excused, you mugs.
I'm not sure. I think it's a technicality. But, you know, yeah, well, what do you expect us to say? Of course you're excused, you know. I mean, jeepers, you know. Yeah, of course. You're excused. But tomorrow night, you have to sing.
I will sing.
Yeah.
Exactly. If everyone else is.
There will be footage, but, you know, I didn't know what was going on at the time, but there we go.
I'm actually meeting my cousin before the game tomorrow as well, so I might be a few ciders deep by the time I get in the stadium.
I will say this to listeners. I've been to many football matches with Gary Hayes. He never sings. This would be a one-off, a first, a unique moment.
I can tell you the last time that I did sing. It was against Derby in the League Cup, and I took Kerry's season ticket and a Matthew Harding. I did sing for that game.
And what did you sing?
What were you singing in that game?
I sang Super Frankie Lampard, because he came back as manager, didn't he? That was the night I nearly got chinned, because Mason Mount was playing for Derby and he squared this ball across to their striker who nearly scored. And I was like, oh, that's a lovely ball. And this guy turned around and went, you Derby? I went, no, sorry. Because I was just happy to see Mount like make that pass. And he went, yeah, all right then. And he kept looking over his shoulder at me all game to see whether it was Derby or not.
Oh, brilliant. But all right, well, look, we should actually talk about the game a little bit. Now, this is where we talk about the inexperience. League games, we are in a league of our own at 11, in the 11th spot. This is probably not going to change one
Palace
way or another.
Palace are doing to us what City are doing to Arsenal.
Yeah, there you go.
Just
hunting
chasing
us down. We could end up in
12th. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Exactly. Well, already, I mean, records are tumbling. It looks like it'd be the least goals we've scored, least points we've scored.
We're winning the bottom of the table league, though.
Yeah, we are. We're top. When they put the second part, yes, champions of the bottom
half. That's like a trophy, lads.
Yeah, if Palace finish above us, do we slip into like the Zenith Data Systems Cup like zone?
Yeah, but we're the only team allowed to play in it, and we still get a draw. But you know, who knows? It was just ridiculous. But I mean, honestly, I know that Frank hasn't had much time to work with these players, and I know he's trying to instill something in them. But you know, for all the reasons Gary said, there is also a side of things. Even though these are inexperienced players who haven't played together, they just didn't look at any fight or drive or desire or passion. Even if you're crap, you can go in for a tackle or you can try and pass. All those things that we can't bear. Go on, Andy.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think the players don't get off the hook here at all. I think there was a real lack of all of those things that you just said. However, they were sent out onto that pitch without a tactical Scooby. You know, that was a tactical disaster class from Frank Lampard. The inability to transition the ball once during the game from defence to midfield to attack was shocking. The massive hole in the middle in front of the defence. What was Zakaria supposed to be doing? You know, what was his job? What was his role? What was he told to do? Because he wasn't receiving the ball to transition. You know, the amount of times we lost the ball, the amount of times we gave the ball away because there were no players, you know, there were no runners, there was nobody around us, there was no overlap. You know, I was watching it from above. I'm slightly nomadic at the ground at the moment because, as you know, I've got two season tickets, but both my boys have been going to all the games. So I've been, you know, living under the largesse of friends and sitting in different bits of the ground. And for the game on Saturday, I was in the Matthew Harding upper with my very good friend Tim Rolls, who I should say thank you to for the ticket. And it was a great view above to see what was going on. And it just looked terrible. No shape. No strategy, no tactics. I just thought it was awful. You can't let the players off. You know, they've got to show a little bit as well. But you can't send a team out without a plan. It doesn't make sense at this level.
No, I think that's an interesting point to throw over to Gary. Can you put things squarely at Frank's feet? Or do you think he just hasn't got time to do anything? And once he picks a formation, is he kind of left bereft of any control over that team?
Look, he's the manager, he's picking the team, he's got to be accountable for it as well, right?
Yeah.
He's not free from criticism. I just think that what you've had this season is... we make a joke about four managers. They've had three managers, right? Because the message from Bruno was going to be the same as it was from Potter. So they've had three different voices this season. They've got too many new players. I just don't think that anyone you got in... Now, you know, this is always my point of, you know, the manager's gone. But my point was, why get rid of him? Because you haven't got, and I know you said, Andy, before, like, there's still something to play for. The league is still there, but it wasn't really. And that's what my point was, is that we should have just kept him until the end of the season as dead man
walking.
What
did I say? I can't remember what I said.
Well, you said, oh, look, they should still, there's still a third of this, quarter of the season to play in the league. Yeah. Which I get, but obviously there is in games, but in points and stuff that Chelsea weren't getting anywhere near the Champions League.
I just didn't
want
to watch 10 terrible games.
No, sure. I understand.
Guess what? You're still going to.
Yeah, but that's what I was thinking, though. I just thought, you know, when you look at it and you take a step back, you just think that I understood, you know, when people talk about what Chelsea have done in the past, you're like, okay, we understand it, because they would do it invariably around January, February time, right? Because then they were like, there's still time to save the season and win a cup or whatever. But in this instance, there literally was nothing to play for apart from the Champions League. And
It was a PR exercise, wasn't it? I mean, the owners felt the heat from the fans and went, we better sort this out. Let's get someone in they all love.
Yeah, but I just think they should have just kept the manager, really.
It's not an upgrade, is it?
Yeah, you can understand why they've let him go, but you can understand why they could have kept him. This is why when people say I'm sitting on the fence, I'm not. I just see it from both sides. I can understand it. Just try not to be too emotional about it. But then, you know, what were we expecting from Frank anyway? Because I just think anyone coming in as the third voice this season to take over and do this. And you've got to think, Frank's been in the job for 10 days. He's played 3 games. The 12th day of him being in the job, he would have played 4 games. Yeah, There's no time for him to do anything with systems.
You said he sends the team out on the pitch, right? You know, he's played numerous formations. He played 3 at the back against Madrid. He's playing 4 at the back against Brighton. He's putting Trevor Chalobah at right back. He's changing how many players from the Madrid game?
That's the one thing I was going to say.
To save them for a game that we're obviously not going to win. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. And as for the, you know, as for the instructions to the team going out there and where they should position on the field and what they should do, particularly without the ball, you know, I just thought was laughable. I mean, I genuinely thought it was laughable. I mean, this is not with the benefit of hindsight. I did say all this at the beginning. You know, a lot of people were saying to me, it's a free hit. It'll be fine. You know, Frank Lampard will be fine. I was like, I don't think he will. I think he's going to lose all these games. And I think the people are going to look at him and go, this guy can't manage a football team. I think it's going to be really difficult for him. And I think, you know, at the beginning, people were saying, oh, it doesn't matter. He's coming in. The season's blown anyway. Season's toast. You know, whatever he does doesn't matter. I think what we're seeing here is a guy that, even with the small amount of time that he's had, is floundering. He's floundering really badly. I mean, I'm looking at those games coming up. The only game that I can see us getting points against is Forest. And even I'm not 100% convinced. You know, if we by any stretch of the imagination can get a draw against Arsenal and stop them winning the league, I'll completely eat my
hat. Arsenal are going to stop themselves winning the league.
There is that. We won't even have that joy. But look at the fixtures we've got coming up and tell me where the points are going to come from. Tell me where the goals are going to come from. You know, I mean, I think it's really difficult. So, listen, I love Frank Lampard. I'm not down on Frank. I did say this. I'm more worried about him than I'm worried about us, although I don't want to be watching this nonsense every week. It's despicably bad.
Yeah, no, I you did say all of that as well as soon as he took the job, that you said, you phoned me and said, I'm worried for him. Because Chelsea don't stand to lose anything more than they've already lost. Whereas Frank has a chance to actually really cement the thought that he's not very good at this level. And I think that's got to be a concern.
Gary's got his hand up very politely.
Yeah, he has. Okay,
I just wanted to finish my point is that I think what I was saying about, you know, Frank hasn't had time to work on systems with these players. So I think he's come in and tried to change too much. We're talking about what
bit like
owners,
the owners
have done. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's come in and gone, right, I'm going to get this team to do this. And they're not doing it on the training ground, so it's hard to get them to do it in a game. And what he's got at the back of his mind is, look, we knew this when he took over Wolves and we were messaging each other and when we saw the team and we all said, Wednesday, you know, why isn't he not playing Wednesday? He's not playing this player because of Wednesday. So, look, I hope that we go out and we get something against Real Madrid. I'm not expecting us to, but you can understand him making those changes against Brighton, right? Because what if he did play Reece James and Reece James got injured and then he missed the Madrid game and everyone would be like, well, we're missing the opportunity against Madrid, because as far or much of a pump that is on Tuesday for Chelsea to get a result, that is the season in that game, right? When that game's over and we're out, our season's done. What I'd be really interested to see is next Wednesday when we play Brentford, he would have had a week with this team. He would have had the weekend to work with them because there's no game because of United in the FA Cup. So I'll be really interested to see if there's an improvement. Because if there is, then you can look in and think, okay, he's done stuff on the training ground. At the moment, he's just rolled from trying to get through these last 10 to 12 days, right? So I'm critical of him. But look, it's Frank Lampard, so he's got $1 million of credit in the bank with me, right? So I'm probably giving him more benefit than I'd give another manager. But I'd like to see what he does against Brentford, and then I think that would be the litmus test a bit more in terms of whether he's doing anything with his players that you can look at and think, okay, there's progress there.
Okay, well, look, the Brighton game, I mean, We started brightly, as always. We always start brightly. We scored a goal, a deflected one. You think, oh, there's a bit of luck for Chelsea. We finally got something go in our favour. And then the rest of the game, Brighton just really overran us, as we've talked about. But were there any, for me, there were two players who kind of shone and showed what their value to Chelsea is. And that was Conor Gallagher, although he got his usual yellow card. And Mudryk showed real signs of what he could potentially do. Again, a lot of potential, but they were the only two that really showed little sparks of moments. I mean, what do you think, Andy?
Well, I'd agree with that. I think certainly Mudryk was instrumental in the goal, and you know, when he runs at players, when he's got the confidence to run
at players.
I mean, what was great was you know that goal was set up because he just outpaced someone to the ball, turned, laid it back. It was he hasn't been able to use that raw pace, and I think that's terrifying for defenders. And once he gets the ability to control that and use that and build that into the game. I mean, he's looked like a Bambi on ice so far. He's looked like an absolute bust. But, you know, you do see green shoots of a very young player under the right manager in the right system actually being able to do something quite exciting. I don't think he had a major impact in the game after that, but he showed green spots. The other player that I think you should highlight is Kepa, because I think, you know, Kepa didn't have a brilliant game against Madrid, but he had a really good game against Brighton. It could have been a lot more if it wasn't for him. I mean, I genuinely think that he did okay.
Kepa, Gary?
He made two good reaction saves.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible distribution.
Well, you know, that's always been a part of his game. Although that has got a little bit better this season, but it has always been a part of the game. But you know, he was called upon in the big moments, as they say, that's the cliche, and he delivered. You know,
yeah, he made two good saves, but this is where I have sympathy for the manager, because I agree, the transitions were terrible. But then when you've got a player, the keeper, holding on to the ball way too long, like you said, didn't you, Kerry, when we're 2-1 down and the cross comes in, and he catches it, you know, into the breadbasket, falls on the floor, lays there for 3 seconds, then gets up. And by the time he gets up, Brighton are in position, waiting for the ball to come out, and they're ready to press. And it's like, Kepa, we're 2-1 down, mate. This isn't a training ground game where you go through the motions of training, where you're like, you take it in, you fall. If we're 2-1 up, I understand it. But Brighton, and the way Brighton pressed and the way they set up was perfect, because as Chelsea, they just worked, Deserby worked out really quick, and you saw him on the touchline giving the directions where he was telling them, don't go yet, don't go yet. And then when the ball went out, it was like, now go. And they would just hold positions where they were almost zonal pressing, zonal marking, right?
Yeah, there were trigger movements,
yeah,
weren't there?
Right, rather than headless chickens just running to where the ball was, they were pressing, and
they were really impressive. I think you're right, they were really, really impressive.
But Kepa played into that. And he was stood there going, who's there for me? And it's like, mate, because what's happened is you've held onto this ball for so long that you've just left players isolated now.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in what you say, but what I will say is that not on all those occasions were there people available for him, because we didn't have players out wide. We didn't, you know, look. So you look at a player like Kante or look at a player like a Jorginho. What they're very good at is dropping from that midfield to receive the ball from the start of the transition. Nobody was doing that. Zakaria wasn't doing it. Nobody was doing it. Enzo wasn't doing it. The ball was either going long to Sterling, who was playing centre forward for some bizarre reason and losing out to huge defenders, or it was going to one of the fullbacks who had no overlap. And so the ball was coming in field, and that's where the press came from. That was the trigger for the press. And it's just like, come on, these are the basics, Frank. These are the basics. It's one thing to say to the goalkeeper, you've got to distribute it better. And I agree with that. You know, it's always been a problem with his game. But there's another thing to say, where's the movement? Or what are you expecting to do? Is it going to go to Jorginho, who's going to knock it back, and then it's going to go wide, and then in field, and then there's a ball over the top? There was no thinking around that by the looks of it. It just looked like 11 players doing their own thing. And I just thought it was pretty shocking, actually.
Yeah,
I do give credit for Kepa standing up in the big moments and making those saves, because it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, no, I just think it was one of those days where I don't remember actually feeling as miserable through the game, apart from being so happy about a deflected goal. Then suddenly it was just misery from there on in, because there was no spark, there was no life, there was no cohesion. And I found it thoroughly depressing. I mean, those photos you saw of Boley and the fans above him having some kind of discussion, you know, People are afraid at Chelsea at the moment, the fans. And I think the sooner this season is over and everyone can just relax and allow a proper pre-season to get into place, with hopefully we get the manager sorted earlier. You know, I mean, I'm starting to veer towards needing a manager with a certain amount of experience who's used to handling superstars. I think my favourite guy at the moment, probably on that list we've seen, is Luis Enrique, only because he's handled the circus of Barcelona. And maybe that's the kind of person we need. I mean, what are your thoughts, Gary?
Yeah, I agree. I think you need someone of that character and, you know, someone who's got that bit about him where he comes in and commands a room. I think that Nagelsmann, I'm not sold on him. And it's not because of his age or anything. I just think, you know, I'm just not sold on what he's going to bring and how he's going to do it. And I understand that, you know, some of his methods and whatnot. But I think you look at Enrique and he comes with that calibre of what Chelsea need. What Chelsea need here is someone to come in and get the club by the scruff of its neck and really batten down the hatches and just get these players in focus. And I'm really happy we're not going to be in Europe next year, because it gives that guy the opportunity to do the Monday to Friday training sessions, because all this team needs. And yeah, I hope we're sat here next year and I'm getting a pat on the back for my excellent analysis. But I genuinely think all this team needs, there's enough talent in there, and people want to throw it around because of the numbers they've spent. All this team needs is time. That's all it needs. And obviously, we, you know, I appreciate it's elite football, it's Premier League football. Time is of the essence. You know, you don't get that. It's a valuable commodity that you don't get. But again, like in 2016, Chelsea have been gifted this through their own failure. But let's not forget what we've got this time and build on it, because working with these players, making them into a team, you can play too many games. And that's what Chelsea are doing at the moment. They're playing too many games and players don't know who's what. Brighton are a team. I was really impressed with them. They're a very good team. But I think Chelsea got better players, and we will be a better team when we get a good manager in, whether that's Frank or whether that's Enrique. Looking at it, look, I know I said last week I'd love Lampard to be the manager. I still would, if it meant we were going to have an opportunity to win things with him. But for the growth of the club, you need someone who's going to come in and got a track record of doing it. And Enrique has.
Andy, what are your thoughts? Enrique, does he look like he fits the bill to you at the moment?
I think if we were a well-run machine of a club that had a very efficient youth system, that had a very efficient backroom, settled backroom staff, that this was a transition from a manager that had really built a solid foundation for a team, then I think Nagelsmann would probably be pretty good to come in and build on a legacy. I think he could bring fresh new ideas and energy to a situation like that. You absolutely wouldn't bring him into this situation. I think you've got to bring a bit of a bastard into this situation. And Enrique, as you say, has efficiently managed the Spain circus, the Barcelona circus. He's dealt with some of the biggest egos in the world, and he's stamped an identity on a team, and he stamped some authority on a team. And I think that's what he needs. It needs somebody to say, right, stop this crap. You know, this is how it's going to be. This is how we're going to play. This is the philosophy, and you are all going to buy into it. Otherwise, you are all gone. And I think he's probably the only one that can do that at the moment. I don't feel a massive amount of excitement about him. There's something about him I don't warm to, but I can't see past him at the moment as being what we need. It ain't going to be Frank, Gary. You know that, and I know.
Oh,
that.
No, it's
you
not.
Know, I know. I'm just saying. It's like, you know, I think that it would be amazing to take a former great and let them build an empire and a legacy and a dynasty with us. But it's just not going to happen. And I fear for his future managerial career. I genuinely do. So, you know, in answer to your question, yes, probably Luis Enrique. Let's get it done as soon as we possibly can at the end of the season. Give him a whole pre-season. Let him come in, talk to everybody, build some infrastructure around himself, and hopefully, as Gary says, you know, have some time with the team to, you know, to stamp an identity that we desperately need.
No, absolutely. Well, look, we are just about out of time, so we should quickly look forward to, if we must, Real Madrid tomorrow night. What are we thinking the score? How are we going to cope? What? Go on, Andy. You can go first. You humped there, rumped.
Well, so. I'm going, but, you know, again, I was displaced. You know, my seats were displaced for the bloody sponsors. So my seats are literally next to the Real Madrid fans.
Do you want to swap, Kerry? We should swap with him. We'll go next to the Real fans. Give him what for.
And he's quite capable of doing that.
In the shed upper. So, you know, I mean, I don't know what that's going to be like. I mean, sometimes it's fun if you're winning. It can be miserable if you're losing. I'm not going in with a lot of hope. I think we're really bereft of confidence and ideas at the moment. So I think Real Madrid will come up and in second gear will turn us over. That's what I think.
Okay.
I think they'll win 2-0 again, so 4-0 on aggregate.
Yeah, I think they're a lazy side, Madrid. I don't think they're the best Madrid side there's been for a while, but they have enough to be arrogant enough to just score when they need to. As you said, they were looking for a second, so they went and scored one, and then they sat back.
Tell you what, City will beat them.
Oh, City
will destroy them.
They will. Absolutely destroy them. Even more so than they did with Munich, I think. Because I think Madrid will fancy showing them how good they are. And I don't think they quite realise. You're going to see. I mean, City are chasing down Arsenal quite happily at the moment. And they haven't even got to play them yet. And then I think that could be a really interesting moment. But, you know, that's it. We're not talking about other teams.
But this City team is Chelsea that we loved. It's got the same mentality.
Yeah,
It's the same Chelsea.
And Madrid's defence is not very good. And I think you know, if we had any kind of striking option, we could have maybe got some joy in Madrid. But we don't. But they have. You know, they've got it in abundance. And I think they'll take them to pieces.
Yeah, they're one of those sides. As soon as they get it into the midfield is so good at knowing the runs that those front players make, and then they're in, you know, and they didn't really have to break sweat. So, Gary, what's your thoughts? What's the score going to be? Any hope?
I don't know where these goals are going to come from, but Chelsea will win 3-1.
Oh, BA.
BA. So what? And then what? We go through on penalties?
Yeah.
Wow,
Gary.
That's extraordinary.
I don't know where the goals are coming from, but I just had this premonition. 3-1.
Oh, I'm getting one as well. Cesar Azpilicueta comes on in the 78th minute and scores a hat trick. There we go. I love it. Wow. What odds would you get on that?
Ivanovic pops up at the edge of the box. Oh, no, hang on. That was Napoli. All right.
I tell you, look, you've got to dream a little. You've just got to dream.
We can dream.
3-1 to Chelsea. You've heard it here first.
It's football. It could happen. You know, of course it could. You know, I just don't have the energy to believe it.
Right, I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw.
Boring.
All right, well, I go 5-0 then. Is that better? It's 1-1 or 5-0. You take your pick of my prediction.
Who's the 5-0 for?
Us.
Oh, okay, then, yeah, go 5-0, you mug. Gus Poyet is going to get an early header like the Man United game, and that's it.
Jody Morris will be blowing his trumpet.
Yeah,
absolutely. And Dennis Wise will score an effing great goal. There we go. European nights. They sometimes surprise us. All right, look, we are out of time, so we should let you all go, and we will all be back soon. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Gary. Come on, you Blues.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.